Right, you can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Okay, now, Don and Phoebe and Ivan, we have got on the line. I think we've got on the line. We've had a little bit of phone trouble speaking to. I can hear her breathing.
Heavy breathing.
Right. don't breathe too heavily, Katie, or you might get us excited down here. Now, Katie, this is thank you for joining us on You Cannot Be Serious. I'm just telling the people who listen to this, we are speaking to Katie Little, who I know I have to say this because you probably get sick of people saying this, but...
explains a lot.
Yes, you are the daughter of the late Gold Logie winner and multiple Logie winner Jeannie Little and your father, Barry. You are the daughter of Jeannie Little. We've got you on You Cannot Be Serious primarily to talk about you, but certainly your mother. Now, with me is a woman called, a person called Fiona Byrne, who says she has interviewed you before.
Gorgeous!
Yes.
Lovely.
Katie, how are you?
I'm great now that I've got a phone line that actually works. Heavens above.
Yeah, and we've got Don Scott over here, who is my colleague and next footballer that I played football with. And we have...
G'day, Don.
How are you, Katie?
I'm super.
And we have a friend of ours that sits in. I'm calling him Ivan. I'm not explaining why we call him Ivan, but his name's Ivan.
Hello, Katie.
Oh, hi, Ivan. Gosh, it's a packed house.
There is a packed house. People come and go on this podcast. It's very, very informal and very loose, as you've probably worked out even before we start, Katie. Now, first of all,
I love loose. I love a bit of loose. I'm just a cheap imitation of my mum. I tell people too. So loose is great. I can do that.
Well, now, we don't want to be preoccupied with your mother because you are a star in your own right, because you are a writer and a actor and a comedian, and you are an interior designer, aren't you, I think?
I don't even know. No, my dad was an interior designer. I'm from a family of creatives, and when you're a creative, you just have to keep reinventing yourself all the time.
Is it easy to reinvent yourself, Katie?
Oh, it's a bit exhausting at times, I have to confess. But comedian would probably go into that pile. I don't know. At the moment, my latest gig I've got, you'll love this maybe, is I'm a speed dating event host.
Are you?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Isn't it fun? I just got this gig where this person's got this terrific business where I just sort of turn up and I introduce all these sort of fabulous people and sit them all down at tables, and then the women stay seated and the men have to move on every 5 minutes. So that's my job. And so I just have to sort of give them a bit of a sort of, you know, poke or a prod to say, come on, hot potatoes, on to the next ladies waiting to talk to you. I love it.
You are an enabler.
a matchmaker, exactly.
On what platform or what site?
In real life.
No, they have dinners. Is that, Katie, where they have dinners and...
No, they don't. They just drink.
Just drinks.
Drink.
But they don't have time to eat. They just drink and sort of have to keep hydrated because they have to keep talking. And the poor things are exhausted. By the time they meet sort of, you know, a dozen people, they're exhausted and ready to go home and forgotten who anybody is.
Now, Katie, you're speaking to someone who's only partially educated, and that's me. Let me just get this. You go to a venue and you ask people, men and women or non-binary or anyone who's standing actually can stand up straight.
Or sit down.
Someone for everyone.
I was just going to say, in this day and age when we're inclusive and diverse and all that sort of stuff. So you go to a venue and you invite people to come along and you matchmake them.
They all just move along. They just all the ladies have a table that they sit at and they stay seated at. And the men all sit sort of opposite them, and every 5 minutes I've got to tell the men to move on to the next table. So they all move around in a big giant circle. Like a conveyor belt, like you're at the sushi train.
I see. You know? So it's like a program dance, or if you can remember what they used to be.
And what's the strike rate, Katie?
Look, it's good, actually. I quite love it too because they have to mark little cards and sort of circle yes or no if they're interested in seeing this person again. And so I take all the cards home and have to sort of spread them all out the next day and sort of say, oh, you know, gosh, and sometimes someone comes back a second time who looks very lonely saying, you know, oh, how does it work again? And I think, oh, the poor darling, nobody sort of circled yes around them. And I'm so overjoyed and excited when I sort of see, you know, this lovely young man get, you know, maybe one circle and then maybe a second circle. And I think, oh, isn't it lovely? He's got three gorgeous ladies that he can sort of phone up when he's, you know,
so Katie,
wanting to go out.
So in another string to your very long bow, do you enlist your talent as a tarot card reader or a tea leaf reader to decide if one person is matched or suited to another?
Oh, well, I haven't done that yet, but I would absolutely love to. Because, you know, Mum was a tea leaf reader. That's what she learnt to do from her Scottish mum. So I sort of say I'm third generation. But I can't, I mean, tea leaves for me, they just kind of look a bit like blobs, really. But tarot cards are the ones that really jump out at me. And so I do the most fabulous readings. And I got described up at Bellingen where I teach tarot numerology every year. They said, this is Australia's foremost psychic. And I thought, gosh, maybe they know something that the rest of Australia doesn't know yet, or me.
so you study the tarot cards and you... What is the logic of reading tarot cards? How can that possibly tell you what's going on in someone else's life?
Well, I love reading tarot cards because I think it never, ever gets dull or boring. I know what the meanings of the cards are, and depending on where they go down in the spread, alters what their meaning means and what other cards appear in the reading. So I just sort of describe what I'm seeing, what the cards are, what their meanings are, and then I always sort of describe it as like having a deep and meaningful conversation with a stranger that you've just met. And so if you were telling all these, you know, having this conversation with a close friend or a relative or someone who knows you, they're already bringing all their sort of baggage along of what they think you should do, or, you know, I told you not to do that, or yes, you should do this for whatever reasons. I have none of that baggage. So all I can do is sort of say, this is what's showing up in the cards. Does this mean anything to you? And they say, actually, yes. Now you mention it, there is sort of a long lost cousin who has been in touch and did want to start a business, and I wasn't ready to do it at the time, or whatever it happens to be. And so it's always fascinating. And I always warn people and say, my tarot cards have got a fabulous dark sense of humour. So if you're at all nervous, you'll get all the scariest sort of cards, and we just have these fun, big conversations. I love it.
So your mother, Jeannie, used to read tea leaves. What did she find in the bottom of the cup that she passed on to you, or information to anyone else that you can remember?
Well, the most memorable reading that I can remember, and I remember this because I was a little girl, and even back then it was scandalous probably to say this, but she went on to the Mike Walsh show and said that she just read the leaves of a friend and told them that she was going to have a black baby. So that still jumps out in my memory, you know, as something that was outrageous back then. And everyone said, Jeannie, you can't say something like that. You can't say something like that. And my mum always used to ask, would say, well, it's true, because 6 months later, very close friends of theirs did adopt a child that came over from Vietnam, with very dark skin. You know, my mum just said, you know, that's what the leaves said, and I said it, and you can all have connections and sort of, you know, be horrified or whatever. I mean, that's back then, before everything was cancelled and politically correct beyond an inch of its life.
So she hadn't had a dalliance with a black man, had she? She just...
No. Well, they wanted to adopt a child, their names down for adoption. And this child suddenly became available, and they did. They had a little gorgeous little girl, sort of with very dark skin.
Holy mackerel.
Isn't it interesting? I love it. The journalist used to come over and sort of sit there and say, quick, Jeannie, let's get this interview out of the way, quick, smart, so that you can read my tarot. I loved it.
Well,
not tarot. Tea leaves.
So, speaking on the same sort of bent, when she was on the Mike Walsh show, I think in 1974, she made a bit of a faux pas, did she not? Because she said she thought the man Mike Walsh, yes, who she'd not never met, was a little gay looking, or a little.
Oh, do you know that? That's so funny. That story.
No, well, I
that
just read
John
that.
Michael.
Yes, I read that.
Yeah,
so
well,
tell us
John
that.
Michael Housen.
Yes,
yeah,
I know.
Yeah, so mum's first ever invitation onto television. She'd been making maternity outfits for herself when she was pregnant with me, because she said they were all so boring. And so she made this fabulous one sort of with a big sort of target on the belly and a handbag that was like a quiver of arrows. And the local paper took a photo and put it in the local paper. And so the Mike Walsh Show, a big guest had dropped out, and they were desperate for anyone, and just went through this sort of rag of a paper and said, quick, stick that lady in a taxi and bring her into the studio. And mum was always too busy. She never watched daytime TV. And she was just sort of thrown onto the TV and sort of thought, gosh, you know, Mike Walsh is very camp, isn't he? And didn't know that Mike Walsh was away on holidays and it was John Michael Housen filling in. And John Michael Housen, meanwhile, thought that the crew was sort of playing a joke on him by sending on a drag queen with a pillow stuffed up under a dress. So he sort of kept saying to my mother, well, you know, you come back when you've had the baby, come back when you've had the baby. And mum kept saying, okay, I will. So that literally how my mum fell onto TV. And then she was invited back after she'd had me. And so, that's it.
So besides you being second part of a mass experience with your husband, Tim, and
yes,
writing a book called Catching a Falling Star, and having this song called Sitting with Demons.
I found out that I literally was living with a demon. Actually, we've since separated, so I'm not promoting that much these days.
About your life, or was that a cathartic experience to purge yourself, or were you not sitting with demons?
Time it was the COVID lockdown, and my husband, who is a landscape photographer, I don't even know if I can say this stuff anymore, to be honest. I don't know what's true and what's not. Anyway, he was grounded, so we were all sort of forced to be in the same house with each other. And when we met each other, we were very into music. Sorry, I've got a dog staying over that's a bit nervous, barking in the background. So we were all sort of, you know, stuck together in the same house. And so we just naturally started writing music together, because that's how we got together, was sort of creating artwork and music, music sort of electronic technology that was sort of just emerging at the time. So, and then I was sort of writing a blog piece and went, oh, this sounds actually like lyrics, and it all fit together fabulously. And it just started this sort of snowball effect, and before we knew it, we had a whole album together, which was really exciting at the time.
and the headline song was Sitting with Demons, was it?
Yeah, so it was about to be honest, it was dealing with mum had Alzheimer's for 11 years, which was extremely difficult to live with. It did really, you know, threaten to kind of send me a bit insane, because I kept thinking, look, Mum's all right. She's like sort of like a small sort of child who sort of just lies there in bed, kind of looking up, you know, blinking up sort of thing. But she doesn't seem distressed or unhappy. But it's Alzheimer's is the most hideous, hideous disease. So, you know, it's so upsetting. And so for me, just getting through 11 years, it is fitting with demons. It's fitting with something that's uncomfortable, that there's nothing you can do about it.
So
you just have to find a way to go on and keep living your life.
So, Katie, that led on to you writing the book, did it not? Catch a Falling Star?
Catch a Falling Star was a memoir. It is a black humor memoir about growing up with my fabulous mum, you know, Junie Little, in our crazy, fabulous showbiz family. And so it's all sort of mad with these terrific, fun sort of stories about growing up. You know, it's really because mum got diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And someone said, you should write a book about growing up with your mum. And I'd always wanted to be a writer, actually, so that was just like a light bulb moment. I went, yes, that's exactly what I need to do, because I wanted to go back in time to remember the mum when I was a young girl, who was so much fun. Oh, my God, I loved, you know, I used to win every sort of dress-up competition, you know, as a kid in sort of primary school and stuff. Everyone hated me because mum was just so fabulous. So I just thought, you know, I'll just go back in time in my own head and I'll write every memory I've got down. and make a fabulous memoir. I love memoirs.
And so much so that your late father, Barry, asked you, did he not, to read the book to him while he was in failing health. Is that correct?
Yes, he did. And so that was really monumental for me because Dad and I always had a bit of a tricky relationship. And then when I was about to sort of, you know, I had a publisher lined up for the book, they sort of said, you know, legally, your father has to sign a piece of paper that says that he knows what's in the book and he's not going to sue you after it comes out. Because there's quite a few sort of revelations. Actually, I used to, when I was doing stand-up for a bit, make a joke and say, you know, I always knew there was a few skeletons in the family closet, but I just didn't realise that my father was in the closet with them.
Katie, why was it tricky? What skeletons were in your father's closet or anyone?
Well, turns out my father was in the closet. He was out of the closet before I was born. So the people in my life who I sort of thought were all these sort of fabulous uncles, quote unquote, we're all, you know, not just gay men, which that's my heritage. I grew up in, you know, fabulous, you know, surrounded by fabulous people. But I didn't realise that, you know, my father had sort of had relationships with them before my mum had come along. So it was just a bit like, it was Craig Bennett, actually, who had a few drinks one night and spilled the beans and said, oh, well, you know, back when your father was sort of in the relationship with this person and sort of his mouth dropped open and said, oh, you did know that. And I had to go, yes, and I thought, no, I didn't know anything. And thank God he got drunk and sort of told me. Otherwise, I would have been the most stupid, naive person who everybody would have been saying about forever, saying, my God, you realise she still hasn't figured it out yet? For God's sake, she comes from the gayest family in Australia and she still doesn't even know.
Well, of all the research I've done on you, I didn't know that either, Katie. So your father was gay before he got onto your mother.
Yeah, which is so
fantastic.
You know? Like, no big deal, you know, but back then, and so this is sort of what I say at the end of the book, it wasn't a big deal to me at all, but it was really interesting because then I sort of went in saying, well, back 74 when I was born, it was still illegal to be homosexual in New South Wales, and that's why the Mardi Gras that was just down the street from us where we lived in Paddington in Darlinghurst was started as a protest. So we all don't realise, you know, how lucky we are now. And I always sort of say that to my kids who are, you know, 1 minute they, them, or he, him, or she, her. I can't keep up. It's all so gender fluid, you know. And I just think it's because of all these terrific protests and stuff that everyone's rights have been recognised. So we're really lucky. We're really lucky.
Katie, tell us a little bit more about your mum, because within an incredibly short amount of time, she went from being a total TV novice to winning the Gold Logie and being the highest paid woman on Australian television.
Well, isn't it amazing? It really is the most fabulous real life Cinderella story. I was born 1974, and so mum's first TV appearance was when she was pregnant with me. By 1976, she'd won the Gold Logie for most popular TV personality in Australia. So as you can imagine too, there were quite a few sort of noses put out of joint by that because this person, you know, she just emerged from nowhere. But she was just so really, actually at Mum's Memorial, I had Wendy Harmer speak and she was fabulous because she got up and really sort of said, you know, talking about women in comedy, Mum really was Australia's first female comedian. And she was just so down to earth and humble, incredibly intelligent. People used to sort of say, you know, ditzy, zany, genie, little, and all this sort of thing, which lots of comedians are sort of portrayed as, you know, a bit dopey, or whatever, suppose like the Fool, the card in the tarot as well. But really, they're highly intelligent, and usually it's comedians who are the people in the world who can actually tell the truth and get away with it and make people laugh at the same time, which means sometimes people change their minds about all sorts of things. Like, you know, maybe that's what helped, you know, broaden people's horizons when it came to accepting, you know, homosexuality and stuff like that too.
And Katie, tell us about when Jeannie was, she'd won that Gold Logie, she was hugely successful. She was poached, wasn't she, by another network? There was a story I remember about her being lured away from her TV roots.
Now, I only vaguely remember things like this because I was only a really young child. So I know that mum sort of started on one network and went to another and all that. And I have seen, because I did go back through all scrapbooks, and I sort of went to Women's Day, their archives, to go through all their magazines and stuff too. So I saw sort of, there was an article sort of saying, you know, Jeannie Little is now, you know, Australia's most highest paid something or whatever. But that really only lasted for a second, because suddenly I think that that show was accessed. I'm even not quite sure, to be honest. Sorry, I'm in chaos tonight with dogs around me, school holidays. Can everyone just go out of the room? This is why I went up the road to sit in the car to have a coffee and relax. And then the stupid phone didn't work, so now I'm hiding in the wardrobe, literally closing the door, and everyone's saying, "Leave me alone."
Now, Katie, Sam loves dogs. What's the name of the dog that you got there, and what kind of dog does Katie have?
Sam, you would love my dog. This was the last crazy bit of chaos that my crazy ex-husband threw into my life. He's a Irish Wolfhound crossed with a Great Dane, so it's like having a small pony in the house.
In the wardrobe.
And he's only 1 year old, and I called him Dog.
Are you in the closet are you in the wardrobe with him now?
I was until I chewed them all out. But no, there's scratching, so he's probably going to come back in again. Here he comes. He's so if you can hear big, loud, heavy breathing in the background, it's really not me. It's Dog.
Katie, is your son following in your showbiz footsteps?
Well, Tom's just turned 18, my eldest, and just didn't stop working as a kid. A friend of mine was working at an ad agency who sort of said, "We need kids in something." And I went, "Oh, good, there's a free biscuit and a cup of tea. I'll go to that." And I think I was holding a baby at the time, which was Charlotte. And then my son, who was tiny, I think he was like 3, kind of pushed his way right through all these other kids, stood in front of the camera, took over, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, okay, it definitely runs in the family. So I sort of signed him up with a casting agency, and he didn't stop working. So he was the littlest, if you remember the fabulous series Rake by yes. Peter Duncan, which was so great. He was the littlest naughty child of Barney's on that show. The Rake, Richard Roxburgh's best friend. So that was probably one of the things that jumps out the most. But he was on every TV ad. Everyone, like, people would see him and say, "Oh, I saw your son on the bus this morning." And I said, "Oh, isn't that lovely? Was he on his way to school?" And they said, "No, on the side of the bus." Like, he was everywhere. but he's 18 now, and he's deciding what he wants to do with his life, which is nothing at this current point in time, which is fine, and I'm respecting that as a parent. It's very hard to parent in this day and age.
Now, Katie, in your other hat that you wear as a comedian, have you had to modify some of your material because the Grievance Brigade are out in this area and land of wokeness we live in, or do you not worry about that, worry about being cancelled or having the social trolls get onto you in the media?
That's a really interesting question, and that's why I love comedy. I was doing quite a bit of stand-up right up until sort of COVID locked everything down, and I kind of found the sort of further I kind of got up the sort of comedy chain, the trickier it all became. And yes. So I did a sort of set at one point that was based on the idea of, and it was called Stray Husband. So it was based on the idea of sort of, you know, comparing men and sort of, I'm trying to remember the details of it now, but it was really funny. And through it, I sort of made these sort of allusions of saying, you know, after, you know, Mother's Day, sort of again, there was this sort of slew of husbands just thrown out of everyone's back doors all around Sydney. There's these poor, hungry, mangy husbands roaming the streets. Nobody knows what to do with them. And, you know, when the butcher's closing sort of about 5 p.m, they're all hanging around that. Well, please somebody sort of take one of these stray husbands home. And so through this sort of set, I sort of made these sort of progressively more risque jokes and sort of said, you know, about, I made jokes about sort of blind women adopting stray husbands, and another one too about sort of saying, you know, someone I know has got a terribly allergic child and was told to get one of these husbands that doesn't drop any hair, and wouldn't you know, within 6 months, bald as a badger, lost all his hair. So, you know, all these ridiculous, stupid kind of jokes that got progressively more risque. And I found that I could actually make joke.
Get away with it.
Yeah, that got progressively worse about all sorts of things. But when I got to the end and made a racist joke, which was on purpose, the audience who didn't know me were deathly silent. They weren't even breathing. And all the people that knew me were roaring with laughter because they know that I'm a good person and that I'm not at all racist. So, and to me, I found that really interesting because I thought that's really the point of comedy, is to talk about things that maybe are a bit tricky. And if we can't talk about it at all, then there's a real problem because there's no communication going on at all. So after the show, it was very interesting too because there was a lot of young people there who were very politically correct. And the owner sort of who ran the sort of club as well, she got in touch with me and said, I just want to talk to you about your set. Yes. And we had a very interesting long back and forth. And I said, I had considered that doing that joke. And it's important. And I said, did anyone actually complain? And she said, no, but a lot of people talked about it. And I said, well, then that's great.
Yep.
I've done it. I've walked the fine line between offending people or, you know, getting people to talk about a topic that's really difficult. And we need to, in Australia, talk about racism because it's important.
Was that topic when you dared to parody BLM, Black Lives Matter, or was that some other?
It was before Black Lives Matter, pretty much, because, you know, once it all sort of went into COVID lockdown and everything, I remember there was the George Floyd, which was horrific, and I was watching everything on Twitter. So all of that happened a little bit later. Yeah, I was doing the comedy just before that. So, and I just thought it was very interesting. Of all the things you can sort of joke and make fun of, you cannot make jokes about racism in Australia, which is a problem. And I'm saying not everybody should be going around, you know, doing that. But that's a problem. If we can't even start a conversation at all, then you've got nothing to kind of start with and start people thinking and talking and possibly changing their minds and opening themselves up to other ways of thinking and looking at the world.
Now, I was just wondering if this was accurately reported. When your mother and was in failing health, did you put your weight behind euthanasia, saying that if people wanted to leave the planet with a bit of dignity, it seemed not a bad idea? I think Andrew Denton was a main advocate of euthanasia. Did you think that would have been good for your mother, or was that a bit misreported, Katie?
I have very, very much so put my weight behind voluntary assisted dying laws being passed. And thank God it has been passed in New South Wales. I think without a doubt, anybody who has had someone in their life who they love with a hideous illness who've watched them suffer wouldn't hesitate. You know, it's just the most excruciating thing you've ever seen in your life, watching someone you love die a horrible, miserable death that we don't even, you know, dogs we take to the vet and say, please, can you, you know, help us along at the last minute. The laws they've passed don't help people with dementia or Alzheimer's, so it wouldn't have helped my mum, but it certainly would have helped my father. And actually, my father and I really had a very intimate, close connection towards the end because there was a phone call sort of saying, your father's sort of, you know, not waking up properly after lunch and we want to send him off to hospital, but, you know, the paramedics are here and he's saying he doesn't want to go. And then we sort of got out the sort of, what's the list where you've got to tick everything and stuff, and everything was ticked no. And so we realised we couldn't take him to hospital even to give him an antibiotic drip. And I said, that's because he doesn't want to go. He wants to stay here and he wants to stay in his room surrounded by his things where he feels comfortable and his belongings, and he's, you know, he's chosen to die here. And it's really very strange to think that I had to really back him up with that. And in retrospect now, as well, the nursing home, who you would think would be used to caring for people in the last stage of their life, everybody seemed to act as if my father wasn't dying, and to the point where I kind of thought, am I sort of going a bit crazy? Because it's clearly blatantly obvious to me that he's dying. And yes, within 3 weeks he did pass away.
But he wasn't wasn't assisted to die. He just died.
He was not assisted to die, and he suffered dreadfully.
Yes.
The last I was so lucky. I had about 3 days with terrific lucid conversations, which I'd pop in after work to see him, and he'd sort of be the same old sort of cranky old bastard he'd always been, sort of saying, "Oh, the biscuits were cold and the tea was warm, and I don't like that nurse, and this was horrible, and bring this over to me, and bring in some salt the next time you come," and all that stuff. And then the next minute would sort of say something exquisitely beautiful to me, sort of like, "You know, you have such a beautiful soul, like your mother," you know. So I was really lucky I got 3 days with my father, and then he sort of became delusional and was in incredible pain. There's nothing more heartbreaking than seeing someone you love dying a horrible, miserable death. So thank God they're passing. I think they've done it in every state now, have they? There might be one left.
I didn't realise they'd even done it in New South Wales, Katie. But
they did finally.
I know Andrew Denton was the main driving force behind that, I think, wasn't he?
Yes, and I actually went to see him speak too and said, "Thank God you're bringing this to people's attention." And I wish my father would have been able to have accessed that, because it would have saved, 3 weeks of what was obviously agonising pain was horrific.
Yeah. Now, your dear old mum, I think, performed at the Royal Command Bicentennial Concert in front of the present king. Back in 1988.
Oh, really?
Yes, well, that's what...
Oh, well, that's when he was Princess Di, right?
That's right. Prince and Princess of Wales were there.
Yeah, see, I don't even remember Charles even being there. I just remember my mum being absolutely humbled and awestruck by fabulous Princess Diana, who was exquisitely beautiful.
That's why I brought it up. I was wondering if she ever mentioned to you about that event.
Yes, she absolutely did, and she had a beautiful photo that somebody took sort of from behind her shoulder, which I can still see it in my mind's eye, of the back of Mum and the Princess Diana's face, with them both sort of interacting. And Mum just said what a beautiful soul, speaking of beautiful souls, she was. My mum particularly too, just like the most open-hearted, incredibly giving woman as well.
Yes, I've read that about her. She was a benevolent factor, generous, I think we say in the industry, generous to all those that she worked with and in fact didn't work with.
Incredible, yep, as well. And looking back to at Christmas time, we sort of, buy little gifts and stuff for every single person that sort of worked at the Mike Walsh Show, whether they were sort of doing, hair or makeup or anything at all, and everywhere. I mean, it drove me nuts as a kid because, we'd go up the street to have lunch and everyone wanted to stop to talk to my mum. So my father and I would sort of be there going, "Oh, this is, exhausting," and sort of sometimes my father would sort of grab my mum if he saw someone approaching, going, Jeannie, it's me. Oh, do you remember me?" And mum would sort of say, yes, I do. I think she'd never be able to remember all these people. And so sometimes, my father would sort of grab my mum and drag her off into a sort of a shop storefront or something just to get her out of the line of sight to hide her so we wouldn't be stuck up the street until the sun went down.
Now, did you get it?
Very good.
Now, Katie, did you get a bit of pushback when you, came out and said you're a bit sceptical of the COVID vaccine? You're not necessarily a denier of it or a vax denier, but you're a bit sceptical of...
An anti-vaxxer.
Yes.
I know, outrageous. No.
Are you
an
anti-vaxxer?
No, I'm not.
I'm an anti-vaxxer.
I had Kerri-Ann Kennelly try to pin me as one on live TV, and I just remember sort of saying, "Look, I just think that I'm a bit of a science geek, actually. I read lots of science, and I know in history... there are plenty of examples where scientists have said, "Hey, check this cool thing out, man. We can see our bones. This is amazing. Check this out. It's called X-rays. How fabulous is this?" And, 6 months later, their arm's falling off because they're dying with cancer. There's plenty of examples where things have gone horribly wrong. And I think, too, what I was trying to say was, when you're dealing with medical inventions and medical companies, there's huge amounts of money involved with it too. So what could possibly go wrong, you know, placing your trust in the hands of some, you know, vaccine that's never really been ever tested before, but hey, let's give it a shot. And, you know, let's not talk about that the virus sort of popped out of Wuhan at a wet food market, which happens to be across the canal from a biomedical sort of laboratory where they've been testing God knows what. So, yeah, I had a few issues with just sort of sticking my arm out and say, go for your life, jab me with whatever the hell it is that you're putting in with the Frankenstein needle. But I'm definitely not an anti-vaxxer. I just wanted to be a bit cautious and have a conversation before rolling over and saying, sure, stick it in my arm.
Well, you've read exactly the same reports as I have, Katie. That's what I'm – well, I'm not an anti-vaxxer, but I'm very sceptical about the whole thing because it's just a huge money-making concern for the pharmaceuticals.
Exactly. Pharmaceutical companies, right? So, you know, all that money and you know – oh, wow. I mean, you know, I don't think I got off Twitter for half of the lockdown. There was so much to look at and read and absorb. And so I also, too, because I love Twitter, was watching, and because I'm a science geek, I saw this little tiny thing in a science magazine at the start of January saying, oh, there's a new virus that's sort of been found, you know, in China. And I went, oh, that's something. So I was watching it way before it came. I think it was March, maybe, by the time it became sort of really public knowledge. So all my friends thought I was losing my mind because I was sort of going up and having a cup of coffee with them up the street, and they'd be sitting there saying, oh, you know, my child's in the cricket camp and this one's doing swimming and I might continue with trumpet or something. And I was just sitting there saying, guys, none of this matters anymore. This is all going to be completely inconsequential and because I could sort of see this virus coming, and then 60 Minutes actually interviewed me because I was, you know, seen as some crazy woman who'd already pulled her kids out of school. And I had to tell all the crew to wear masks, please, when you come, because I'm a bit nervous. And then fabulous, thank God, I do remember apologising, saying, I'm so sorry. You know this looks crazy. I know this sounds crazy. And then Liam Bartlett kind of drove down the driveway and said, I just got off a plane from China. You're not crazy at all. This is really scary because nobody knew what we were in for. We're just absolutely so lucky, touch wood, that it turned out to be, you know, it was still horrific, but, you know, it could have been a lot worse.
So did they round you up on the social media and give you a belting, or you're thick-skinned enough not to worry about that sort of thing?
I am thick-skinned enough now not to worry about that. I think when my book came out is the only time really that social media got to me, because I put a lot of time, you know, eight years of my life into writing that, and I did want to be a writer, like my father always wanted to be a writer. When it came out, I thought, yay, you know, my book's coming out. I'm going to be recognised as a writer. But, of course, nobody wanted to talk about that. They just wanted to sort of rip me apart on live TV and discuss the most intimate personal details of my sort of, you know, family history, which wasn't meant to be the main bit of the book. It was just a fascinating thing that came out whilst writing the book. So, and then, you know, social media, you get, I think at night time something went ping and I was half asleep, went, oh, I think my husband sent me something, and it took me into some hideous sort of wormhole of hatred of people sort of saying, isn't she vile? She takes off her mother and she's on her coattails and blah, 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 and all this disgusting, blah, blah, blah. And I just remember thinking, oh, my God, oh, this is horrible.
Yeah, no, right, in the privacy of their own word processor in a little room and no one knows who they are, they get off on giving you a belting. I've discovered Katie. Now, Katie, who do you admire of your peers in what industry, and who did your mother like and respect or got enjoyment out of, if you can remember?
Wow, now there's a question. Well, I can answer for my mum easily. Mum was really inspired by, I think, sort of fabulous sort of silver screen movie actresses. So obviously Marlene Dietrich, she adored. And really that's what makes the story, which I wrote about in my book, of why she's such a fascinating character and person. I'm still waiting for someone fabulous to come along, like, you know, what's his name, who just did Elvis, to say, let's make a screenplay and a film about your mum, because the story's so incredible. She really did want to idolise all these Hollywood heroines and fabulous movie stars. But she grew up in an extremely poor household with a single mum who she was wonderful, who she learnt how to sew from, who I'm named after her, actually. And because they had, no 2 cents to rub together, mum was very young and she had a terrible stutter as well, which some people go, oh, yeah, I forgot about your mum. So her, as being the youngest, her mum, when she went to school and was hideously sort of teased as well, said, oh, don't worry, Jeannie, you can just stay home for another year. Which, mum used to tell that story and go, isn't it amazing? I got to stay home for another year. So she got to stay home, learnt how to sew from her fabulous mum and Nan, as she's known in the book, and wanted to look like a movie star but didn't have the money to buy anything. So mum was so far ahead of her time. She was wearing false eyelashes way before anyone else sort of thought about it. She wanted to have fabulous kind of, a suntan look, so she was rubbing dark foundation all over her face and her body. Like now they all, the Trumps and everybody all do all this fake tanning stuff. Mum was doing that back then too, and doing stuff like sort of wanting to make an ostrich feather boa or something. She just sort of would get organza and kind of rip it to shreds and turn it into something that looks like it. Or a silver jacket, she'd sort of make it out of foil to look like some incredible movie star sort of look. And so when she sort of fell onto TV, these are all the ideas that she drew on for years and years, because she had to do a weekly spot with next to no budget and come up with something fabulous. Everyone, oh, my God, isn't that wonderful? I find that story really remarkable.
Yep.
And incredible.
Extremely resourceful.
She loved movie stars. Yep. Really resourceful. Which, in this day and age too, with everything sort of, doom and gloom and heading towards economic repression, depression, blah, 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 and all this sort of stuff. And I think these are the sort of stories we need to tell to say, like my kids now, oh, my God, every 5 minutes, ding, dong, Uber Eats, ding, dong, Uber Eats. They're just, all these young kids today are nuts. So at some point they're going to have to be told, look, you can get by without Uber Eats and, all this crazy nonsense.
Righto. Now, Katie, before the dog rips your leg off, maybe who makes you laugh? What do you find certain comics humorous, or what is your humour?
Who?
Do you like, for example, what's the man who does the Golden Globes, I can't think of the Englishman.
Ricky Gervais.
Do you like him, or do you think he's a bit out of line?
You have picked the only comedian that I absolutely adore. I love Ricky Gervais, and I am extremely difficult when it comes to watching any comedy, because I'm like some terrible maniac who has two voices going on inside my head. One that's saying, this isn't funny, it's terrible, what are you watching this for? How did this person get the show? This is appalling, blah, 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 blah. And the other voice is saying, you could do this, why aren't you up there? You should be doing this, you should be putting ideas down, blah, 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 blah. Ricky Gervais is fabulous. And his show, what was the one he did?
Humanity?
Afterlife?
Afterlife, yep.
Afterlife.
Well done, Ivan.
Oh, wow. Afterlife is just so incredible, really. Nobody talks about death, nobody talks about humanity as well. He's fabulous. He's absolutely fabulous. Adore him to bits.
Absolutely. Now, so this has been a fascinating insight into you and your mother. I know you've done plenty of interviews and you probably get asked the same questions. We hope we haven't quite asked you the same questions that you usually get asked.
It's been amazing. I thought I was being asked on for a 5-minute laugh, so I'm in shock. Gosh, terrific.
Now I'm going to just finish this, but I think you wrote this about your mother, and I was captivated by this. Did you say when your I think it was a eulogy to your mother? Did you say I'll be here tomorrow? Alive and well and thriving, I'll be here tomorrow, it's simply called surviving. It's before the dawn, this fragile world might crack, someone's got to try and put the pieces back. So,
well, they're the lyrics of the fabulous Jerry Herman from Jerry's Girl. So Mum, and at the end I did play a little video piece of Mum singing that song. I'll be here tomorrow, alive and well and thriving. I'll be here tomorrow, my kind is still surviving. I'm not quite sure if that's the correct words, but it's so heartbreaking. And Mum used to sing that in one of her stage show. So she was also a fabulous cabaret artist as well. And, you know, if you don't shed a tear to that, I don't know. It's the most exquisitely beautiful song. And Mum had an exquisitely beautiful voice as well.
Well, I should have mentioned that you got rave reviews about your voice when you sang on I'm only just reading what it says, and it wouldn't be wrong. If it's on the Google machine, it wouldn't be wrong, Katie.
It wouldn't be wrong. Now, the best thing that happened was Studio 10 asked me on to sing Sitting with Demons live with sort of, you know, less than 24 hours notice, which we both, Kim and I, looked at each other and went, oh, my God, I don't even think we've got a backing track. I said, just say yes, just say yes. We'll never be asked again. Just say yes. So
that's what your mother used to say.
Yes! So we went from singing it in a studio, which was so much fun, to singing it on live TV where they changed the intro and cut it short. So I thought, God help me if I get this wrong, I don't know. And right before that, too, they put me on a panel where they were testing out all sorts of crazy things to eat, one of which was sort of a combination of marshmallows and peanut butter, and said, here, shove a load of that in your mouth and see what you think of that. And then I was there desperately trying to swallow water down while they sort of switched cameras to say, and now, Katie Little would like to get up and sing Sitting with Demons. And I thought, I can't even swallow. This is going to be horrendous. So anyway, I survived.
Now, Katie Little, I don't think we've ever spoken to anyone who's been as effervescent, ebullient, up for a chat, and we really appreciate it. So on behalf of Fiona Byrne, Don Scott, and Ivan, Ivan who?
Don't say my last name.
No, I won't say.
Ivan who?
I'm going to tell you this. I'm going to tell you this, Katie. Ivan's name is not Ivan. His name is Paul. And Don here, when he was first introduced to him, said, Jesus, he said, you look like Ivan Milat. So, much to the chagrin of Paul and his wife, we call him Ivan now. So, thank you very much for joining us. It's been fantastic, and you are a star, and we love you.
This is the most exciting thing that's happened to me all week, all year, I should say. This has been fabulous. I've loved every second.
Good on you. All the best.
Don't leave me here alone with the children and the dogs, please.
Right, well, this is how we wind it up.
Cut me off.
Thanks, Katie.
Bye.